So you didn't even know that the suspense
broke. That's right. That's right. Wow.
The first thing I'd like to do, and as I will do every morning with the chair's permission, is to respond to some issues which might have been brought up the day before. So Thursday's answer to Wednesday's questions. We have produced a replacement agency overview, Oregon's History of Improvement slide at the being reminded by Senator Gordley that a couple of the bills were missing, and that's in your package. To continue with the comments that I was making, and let me just restate the premise. Most observers, our employees, the legislature, and the school officials believe that the department is not well organized and creates a huge amount of frustration as those folks try to deliver services to children, and the point of this exercise is to get services to classrooms. And I think there is a general agreement that the department can do a much better job and be much better organized. And so that's the assumption and the testimony that I'm offering following my colleague Mr. Burke's testimony has to do with the management approach to correcting the problems that are observed and experienced in the field. What I know about management is that the first step to correcting problems in an organization is to get an understanding about how the agency works before attempting to impose change. It's been my view that no matter how poorly an organization is operating, it can only always get worse. And if you don't approach correcting it in a systematic and disciplined way and get folks involved, it will get worse. And so the first step is try to figure out what's going on. We have learned what this agency does and how it works. We have untangled discrete functions and prepared a complete listing of those functions. Now, when you know how an agency works, you can redistribute activities. You can reorganize how functions are done and develop management strategies to achieve a high-performing organization. And let me again repeat what I said yesterday. This is a management problem. This is not a dedication of staff or hardworking staff problem. The people at the department are working very hard to deliver services and are delivering, in many cases, excellent services, particularly in view of the lack of support and discipline and organization up the chain of command. And so this is not any reflection on the employees at the department. To help us with that activity, to review these parts of the agency, which we've been able to uncover and put in a notebook, we've selected a representative group of insiders and outsiders to help us with what we're calling a business case review. This is not an education policy review. This is a management business case review. The business case review group will make recommendations to the superintendent who, since these recommendations will certainly have policy implications, we'll then test those recommendations with some of the groups and individuals noted by Representative Bates and Senator Gordley. Because clearly, no matter how wonderfully we get the Management Act together and the proposals we make, the people who have to execute them need to be familiar with them and give us advice on how to proceed. So to continue with the remarks I was making yesterday, as we go through this process, if we agree that an activity should be done and done by anybody, we will then decide where and by who the activity should be done. Now, the candidates are the department, educational service districts, school districts, specific schools, classrooms, teaching colleges, or contractors. I think that describes the service delivery system for the entire system, the K-12 system. Those are potential candidates to deliver all of the services which are either now being delivered by the department or which are being contracted out by the department, and we need to take a close look at those. And we will assure that every activity is being done effectively with respect to cost and outcome. We will continue working with our group, and we'll keep you informed until we have reviewed every activity of the department. point of this exercise, or the result, is maximum value to the classroom, accurate information to policymakers, accountability for billions of dollars. This slide represents specific timelines and commitments from the department's management team. By June of 2003, our business case group will have finished its work and upper management realignment will have been completed. Those are two separate tasks. The business case review group will have done its work, and we will have done a realignment of the management staff at the agency by December.
If I might interrupt, Ben, what you're saying, just so that I can make sure that I've got an understanding of what's going on, by the end of or beginning of June, you'll have completed the piece where the review group or the advisory group will have gone through the functions of the department and have decided where those would be best placed.
That's correct. And again, reiterate the comments I made in response to Senator Gordley's concerns, we will then, the next step is by December, we have implemented a redistribution of the activities, and that will be the area where we will consult with the various professional groups and standard-setting groups that Senator Gordley mentioned. To make sure that we're not having any unintended consequences and to add maximum value to those services. But clearly, if we are talking about major shifts in where and how services get delivered, there's planning, negotiations, avoiding unintended consequences, and all of the sort of management 101 stuff that you try to do. Plus, we have to align what we're doing with the superintendent's policy, and then we have to check with the groups that have been thinking about specific policy issues. And I think that was a good, some good insight on Senator Gordley's part. By January of 2004, we'll have fully implemented the changes that are the result of this process, which means that we will have redistributed or dropped activities. We will have restructured the department's organization for maximum efficiency, and we expect that we will have achieved a high-performance organization at that point. I expect that the committee may want to give us some direction either during the rest of this session and following the session, either the Ways and Means Committee or the Interim Education Committee, or both, getting regular updates and reports on our progress in this area.
Committee members, this is an important point that we need to be very careful as we consider, because we're going to be essentially having to put together a budget on an entity that is in transition, and certainly our ability to keep checked in and be part of the discussion as this process moves forward is going to be really critical. So I think that we may end up being in a place where we need to consider check-ins before the emergency board education subcommittee, and possibly check-ins before the interim education policy committee also, against a timeline of functions and outcomes that we put together with the department. Senator Meserle.
Thank you, Madam Chair. In your first analysis and realignment, we're almost through that cycle. Do you have anything that you can contribute to us to kind of give us an idea of where you're headed?
Chair Morgan, Senator Meserle, one important cohort of information for us to have is the resources that the department has remaining following this process. And so we have frozen our group after two meetings. We're going to come and have this discussion with you and learn how you want to proceed, get some insights, and then we're going to start the group back up. And so I don't have anything that I would like to forecast at this point, except to say that the department is closing in on its core activities, and I think we have put together a group which has insight and knows how to do this. And that we will probably, in very short order, because we put ourselves on a fairly short timeline, be able to report to you how these functions should be distributed. And we expect to do that in about two or three meetings. I don't think this is not one of these long processes. We have made progress in the other part of the exercise, which is to reorganize the department, as I mentioned earlier, where you had 2 years ago at this time 7 associates coming in and talking about the agency. You now have 4. And those are changes that we were able to make just by simply thinking that no matter what the organizational construct was in the future, since we'd had some resignations and vacancies, it was really an opportune time to push together a couple of entities. I can give you an anecdote. We have a curriculum section and a special education section. There's been some discussion about TAG programs and how well the department does in delivering those services. And what we discovered was, because of the separation between the special education unit and the curriculum unit, the curriculum folks were going out to the schools and talking about education elements such as math, reading, science, social studies, but had been directed not to talk about TAG because that was in another section. Well, that's just silly. They're perfectly capable of adding that cohort to what they're doing. And so those are the kinds of things you can achieve just administratively. And we're making very good progress because those are variables that are close to us and we can control them. We're having a much improved, or not improved, but a much more content-rich discussion with the board about issues. So the two tracks we're running on, I can't give you a lot of insight until that group meets and makes its determinations. I think we're making very good progress on organizational issues at the department.
Thank you.
Madam Chair. Representative Bates.
Madam Chair, first I'd like to applaud the work that your task force is doing inside the department. This is a department, I believe, of well-meaning people who have worked hard, but my 10 to 12 years of contact with them as a school board member, they just were not very functional. They couldn't give us information we wanted and needed. They couldn't give us help on curriculum, but they gave us lots of paperwork to fill out over and over and over again that was really quite meaningless. And I think that you're moving this department in the right direction. The real proof will be not only what you report to us, which is important, but what we hear back, I think, from school districts, superintendents, and principals about how the department has changed. And we won't obviously know that until, at the earliest, I would expect next year as the school year rolls along. So I'll be very interested in the 4 or 5 districts that I cover in my district, what the reaction is and what the relationship is to your department now as changes come about. But I do believe we're moving in the right direction. It's been a long time coming, but at least it's being recognized now and dealt with, and I appreciate what you're doing. I think the chair is absolutely correct, though. We need some way of getting feedback as the year unrolls of how you're doing, what you're doing, and what the results have been at that point.
Thank you. I appreciate that. I would just comment that the State Archives building is filled from the floor to the ceiling with efforts such as this, which state great intentions and come up with astounding recommendations. And what is usually missing is execution. We intend to execute what we determine at the end of this process. Superintendent Castillo heard precisely the issues that you raised when she was campaigning. We have, in our discussions with folks, have heard the same thing. But I have to tell you that the employees of our department are equally frustrated, and we can make much better use of their efforts. So we're going to need strong support from this body, because we're going to do what you never can do in government, which is change the status quo. And there will be people who won't like it, and they're going to come and talk with you, and we need you to be firm when you start hearing the complaints.
Please proceed.
With the exception of accountability responsibilities, when we are done reorganizing, the department and the K-12 system won't be doing different tasks. The department may be directly assigned fewer tasks, having either eliminated or transferred responsibilities. We should be doing work that makes the entire system transparent to decision makers such as yourselves, and that gives assurance to your constituents that their money is being spent wisely. We also must ensure that any work that is delegated or contracted is done effectively and accountably. The work that I've described so far is, in fact, Management 101. Combined with an elected official with the courage to support purposeful, focused management against standards these management efforts will produce results, and Superintendent Castillo is determined that we are going to make changes. At this point, the ball moves to your court. To the extent that we gain credibility with you and our partners, I urge you to make use of the department as a management and accountability tool. At your direction, we have established the accountability tool of assessment, which is testing. We produce a report card, and the database initiative has provided valuable information about the results produced by the system. These examples illustrate the potential for additional management information about how the system performs and opportunities to ask for accountability. I would note that without any action on the part of the state, No Child Left Behind imposes additional accountability duties on the department. And I would just quote to you from a summary of No Child Left Behind, 10 elements. The first one is, demonstrate that the state has developed a state accountability system of standards and assessment for all students. Number 10, require districts to collect data at the student, teacher, school, and district level that forms a basis for accountability. Again, the point of this exercise is maximum value to the classroom, accurate information to policymakers, and accountability for billions of dollars. I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Representative Martin.
I'll just make a comment. When you're doing your internal review, one of the things that I'll give two things that always were bountiful for me when I was doing performance auditing. And the first was to answer the question, why do you do it this way? And they said, well, that's the way we've always done it. That's the number one. You know you've got great savings there. The number two was on the hit parade was we're following the letter of the law. Usually they are not following the letter of the law, and if you go back and look at the letter of the law, you'll find that they're not, and the law didn't require such and such. So those are two little energy-saving tips for you.
Chair Morgan, Representative March, I couldn't agree more, and for the purpose of this exercise, in an abstract way, we've asked our business case review to set aside the Oregon statutes and just take a pure management look. If we think that statute changes are made, we'll come back and have a conversation with you. The third one is, yeah, that management stuff is really good for other people, but in fill-in-the-blank specialty, it doesn't work because we're different than everything else.
Well, I would also submit for the committee's consideration that if you look at the education area in general, we have the responsibility of spending more than half of the general funds. And if you look at the K-12 area, we have the responsibility of spending just a little bit less than half of the general funds. And I think in terms of being able to give the taxpayers of the state of Oregon and the lottery ticket buyers of the state of Oregon some assurance that their money is being reasonably well spent, we need better management tools in place than we have right now. It was a real instructive exercise for me when I was first given the chair of this committee to approach the department to try to get my hands around what it was that we were going to be looking at in this committee. And it was interesting the lack of specific information that I was able to get about how the department was organized and who reports to who and how the money flows through the department and what it actually buys for the state and for the people that pay their hard-earned tax dollars into the system. And my discussion with the department has kind of gone forward from that point since the beginning of the session. And I think that there are, within our grasp here, a lot of steps that we can take that will open up a discussion with the people of Oregon about what we do in the K-12 school system and how we spend our money. And it's a huge discussion that we need to have. I think that it isn't clear to the people, especially to the people that don't have kids in the school system, what it is that they're buying with almost half of their general fund dollars. And I think that there are huge places that we can move this in terms of the accountability discussion. If we can show people what it is that they're getting for the money that they invest, then we can have a more meaningful discussion about how, whether we need to put more money into the system or whether we need to use the money differently than we use it now. But I don't think that we have the ability right now to have that conversation with the people of the state in anything but landscape kind of a discussion. And so as we move into this, I'm very interested in a dialogue with the department about how to put information forward about what's actually happening within the schools so that we in this building and the people that put their money into the system can see what it is they're getting and whether we're actually getting what we want to get when we're spending money in different areas. That's the piece of this that, to me, holds out a great deal of hope.
Madam Chair?
Senator Gordley.
Thank you. I appreciate your comments very much. I would also ask about another area. I'm very concerned, many of us are concerned, that as we look at the challenges that the budget has given us, and as we look at changes in staffing patterns throughout all of our state agencies, it doesn't appear that anyone really is looking at the big picture in terms of what are the impacts on affirmative action. The governor, I think, still has a vacancy in his office in the position of director of affirmative action. I think that position is about to be filled. But we don't have anyone really looking at the big picture in terms of what were the gains we've made, say, over the last decade or two. And now that we're having to do these layoffs, what are the impacts on those gains? And so as your agency is going through its overview, where does affirmative action fit? What should we look for that will be different or that will enlighten us as to how the affirmative action piece fits with the work that you and this task force have taken on?
Chair Morgan, Senator Gordley, as I mentioned earlier, we have reduced to four in terms of the structure at the associate superintendent level from seven, and two of those are folks who are temporarily in place. And it is the intention of Superintendent Castillo to, as we recruit, to be sure that we find someone with a diverse background to fill one of those positions and assign specific responsibility for the issues that you just mentioned, with a direct reporting relationship with her on those issues, so as to raise the importance of making sure that we don't lose ground and, in fact, gain ground in those areas. This is a very important issue to the superintendent, and she intends to inform that view with very specific action and hiring decisions. And we are, unfortunately, we've lost a lot of management individuals, but that does give us the opportunity in hiring decisions to hire with that in mind and to make specific assignments to a high-level management position. And so it certainly concurs with my view about if you have an intention, and we're pretty good at expressing intentions, it's execution that's the issue, that you need to assign specific responsibility and then make sure you follow through with it.
Senator Messerly.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I want to change directions just a little bit. As I'm looking through our book in relation to performance measures and goals, I don't find anything except what is projected to deal with in the future. Is there no record of any performance measures or outcomes for any history of this? And so that we can kind of, I think it would help us identify and see what the analysis and the realignment and all those needs of the department might be. Maybe I'm just not finding it in the book, but I can't find it.
I think your point is real well taken, Senator, and it's my hope that as the advisory group goes through their review, that we will have an opportunity to have a discussion with them about performance measures.
Madam Chair, if I could follow up, just a simple question. Is there no compilation of performance measures in the past?
Chair Morgan, Senator Messerly, we embarked on the effort to produce what you have in your notebook during the last 100 days. And I don't, we did not find anything. We'll certainly look further, but, and perhaps someone, Pat, could comment on this. I think the answer to your question is no.
Please proceed.
Yeah. Madam Chair, in your booklet, you'll see the third draft.
Record, Dr. Burke.
Sorry, I'm Pat Burke, Deputy Superintendent for Education Policy. There's a document called the Vision, Mission, Goals, and Performance Measures. This is the data, not the specific data, but the performance indicators for the Oregon Progress Board. Now, some of the data indicated in here, we do have historical information. For example, Senator Messerly, the number of schools identified as being low performing on the state report card. We have 4 years.
Where would we find this?
That specific data we would have to pull out of the report card. This document that I'm referring to is, I believe, in the agency overview section.
Okay. This is in the back of the piece that was inserted into the tab labeled agency overview this
morning.
That's
correct. And those in the right-hand column of that document, those are the performance indicators for the goals identified with the Oregon Progress Board.
Chair, if that information is available, I would be very interested in seeing whatever they have. I think that's important to our process.
And, Madam Chair,
Senator Gordley,
just to clarify, the goals, are these stated in priority order?
I'm sorry.
Are these goals, as they are these laid out in priority order, priorities for the department? For example, the first one is percent of eligible children enrolled in Head Start, Oregon Pre-K.
Chair Morgan, Senator Gordley, no, they're not laid out in priority order. I would add that we do have a great deal of data at the department, and the data initiative that you all instigated has created a great deal of data, and there's no lack of information. It is the setting of the performance measures and aligning that data with those and using those as guideposts, which is something we have just completed. There's lots of information available to use in measuring how well we're doing against those standards. But the standards are something that were just created.
Representative Bates.
Madam Chair, we've asked for all the agencies to list for us most important, least important of what they basically do. And then if we have to go to that list for cuts, we need to have that list from you to do so. Is that in this report somewhere else?
Chair Morgan, Representative Bates, these are performance measures. We have the information in terms of priorities and our budget arranged in that order. for when you get to the budget discussion. This would be against Superintendent Castillo's and the board's priorities as they've set them.
Thank you, Madam.
The performance measures, I think, are different.
I understand them, yeah. Madam Chair, I understand those are different. I just want to know if they're in the document, but if they're not, we'll look forward to seeing them.
Yes, we have done, Chair Morgan, Representative Bates, we've done that work, and tough work it was.
When did these become performance measures? Are they new performance measures, or has the agency had them for some time?
The performance measures were developed. We got some help from Jeff Tryon's at the board, and we just finished creating them about a week and a half ago in time for this submission in this process.
I can see why you don't have any data behind
that.
Prior to these performance measures, did the department have any performance measures?
Let me...
No.
Chair Morgan, no.
Maybe I could...
Excuse me while I get my blood pressure under control.
Perhaps I could add a little history. Last session, when LFO was doing its detailed analyses of agencies, one of the things that we did put in there were agency performance measures. We didn't do it this time because of this detailed information available. But at that time, when I asked the department what their performance measures were, there were three, basically, that they said they were using. One was the dropout rate. The other was... another one was the percentage of students meeting standards. And I think the third one was the percentage of schools using or on the DBI. So those were the three that they informed me that were their performance measures at that time.
Did they bring forward data to support their progress in those areas?
Not in this format, not in this kind of format, Madam Chair, just what was available, for example, on the through the dropout reports, through the student assessment data, and then just a number they had for the number of schools used or on the DBI, the school districts on the DBI.
I'm kind of at a loss for words here.
Madam Chair, if I could say something.
Certainly.
Because I'm never at a loss for words. That's the only one I'm going to say. This department obviously in transition, an agency doing what it needs to do. It's going to have to reform itself from many aspects. There's been a crying need for this for at least 10 years, and we're probably speaking to the wrong people here. You are the people who are going to make this change occur. And all the aspects of the department should change, its reporting system, its accountability for itself, as well as the system it's overseeing. I feel there's a lot of accountability for the money we send to the system at the local level through school boards, although I have some concerns over the large districts not having as much accountability as they should. But your agency in the past has not come to the legislature on a statewide basis and said this is how we're accountable and this is how we're holding that $5 billion accountable. And what I'm hearing from you is we're moving there. We're moving there. And you come up with a list of goals and objectives, but you have no data because they're all brand new, and I appreciate that. You need your baseline. You need to start building that baseline and go forward over the next 3 or 4 years. You're coming up here being honest with us, and I appreciate that. I don't want you getting hammered for being honest. It's much easier to come up here and say, I've got a great agency, blow a bunch of smoke at us, and get out of the room 5 days later, and nothing ever changes. I sense that this agency is really trying to make change, and as a result, you're saying to us, we don't look so good right now, but we know that, and we're going to fix it. And that's what I think I'm hearing this morning, and I appreciate that. And all of our blood pressures will come back to normal very quickly here, I think, when we realize that you're being honest with us, which is something we don't often hear up here, I think.
Well, Chair Morgan, Representative Bates, I appreciate that, and we are trying to be play the game on top of the table and be transparent because you have to explain what we're doing to your constituents. I would say that I think that when we have a little more time, there is information in the agency that we can correlate with these performance measures, and appreciate the continuing faith in the powers of rehabilitation.
Madam Chair.
And I do think also with the database initiative that there is data that can be slotted in to the performance measures that will show trending. I mean, one of the problems that we've got is that the database initiative is a fairly shallow pool of data. And I would like to have it noted that it is a priority for me that alignment take place of the data that you have available underneath of the performance measures so that we can have a meaningful dialogue in pretty near future about where we're going, what the data is that we're collecting, and hopefully what it's trying to show.
Chair Morgan, I think to be fair, the many of the pieces of work that needed to be done, the hiring of some excellent basic staff people at the department has really positioned us to do this. And I think that the previous folks at the department did put together many of the pieces that we're willing and able to stand on and go forward with. And as I say, the department staff are capable and able to do this. And many of the elements, the hiring of Dave Fazier and other folks, have really positioned us to move forward. And so I don't want to kick any dirt on the previous administration, and they positioned us well to move forward with this effort, and we hope we can come in every meeting and have made a little more progress and keep lowering the blood pressure.
I do want to make it very clear that I've been very impressed with the talent that you have in the department. You've got some excellent people over there, and I do think that having everybody be on the same page in terms of what the expectations are is only going to help channel that energy, that there are very, very excellent people over there. Representative Smith.
All this discussion is well and good. However, I have yet to trust an agency to do what the legislature has directed them to do. I think legislative oversight is going to be very important in your process. Madam Chair, with your permission, I would like to attach several budget notes that indicate that they need to report to probably every board meeting what their progress of
the Representative Smith, if you'd like to draft your budget notes,
I'd
be glad to receive them.
I'm just going
to
serve notice.
The process is that we need to have them okayed by the co-chairs before we can
I understand that.
Budget.
I understand that, but I'm just serving notice that I think that they need to report to every e-board meeting, to the full e-board and to the sub on the e-board, and I would be more than happy to serve on that e-board help the agency keep in mind with what we have directed here on this committee, because not only do they need follow up during the interim on their level, the legislature needs follow up on our end, because as we know, once we leave this building after our regular session, the agencies are free to do what they want to do when they want to do it. And like I say, I'm not totally trusting of any agency, and this agency may be different. Now is your opportunity to make me eat my words and prove me differently. So that's my challenge to you.
Representative Morgan, Chair Smith, we'd be happy to help draft those budget notes to make sure that we have the same focus.
Get in contact with my office to make an appointment.
And of course, Superintendent Castillo has constituents who are equally interested in making sure that the agency does its work right.
Senator. Thank you, Madam Chair. I'd like to see the prioritized list. When can we have that?
We'd be happy to get that to the staff and have her get it to you.
When would that be? Could we hear what's on it? I'm just a little impatient here. It would be helpful as we hear the rest of the presentations to have context. And context for me is understanding what's on the prioritized list.
Chair Morgan, Senator Gordley, we will get that to you today. May have draft stamped on it, but we'll get it to you.
That's fine. Thank you.
You have papers exchanging hands behind you right now.
Chair Morgan, we know that the community college set a very high standard for responding to this committee, and we're trying to beat that standard.
Well, and we also recognize that you're in a performance review process, and so I'm sure that that adds a great deal of uncertainty to where you're going to finally end up. And so I appreciate the you're kind of balanced here on the edge of a razor blade.
That's a good one.
Several different activities are all intersecting at the same time.
Sharpening the razor.
Yeah, me.
Senator Masterly.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I think we've received some good information, not bad information, but I appreciate that we've received it this morning. But I would like to get down to the basics and better understand the process that you're going to be using. For instance, on page 2 of this performance document, you've got one set of goals, and then on page 5, it says the current department strategies. Could you kind of fill in what the basis is and the thinking?
Well, I think I'm going to ask Vicki Fleming, who worked directly on these, to come and respond to the specifics of those questions.
Sorry, we were conferring. For the record, my name is Vicki Fleming. I'm Assistant Superintendent of Instructional
Would
Services at the department.
Hold the microphone.
Sure.
The chair has a horrible head cold.
All right. Chair Morgan, I beg your indulgence in repeating the question.
Senator
Masterly.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm just looking at our document on performance measures.
Yes.
And on page 2, you have one set of goals. And then I notice on page 5, it's headed the current Department of Education strategies. And what is the basis of that breakdown, and how are you going to proceed?
Chair Morgan, Senator Masterly, as Mike mentioned, this is definitely something we consider to be a work in progress. What was used to construct the goals was the information that we did by going through every project and activity in the agency and breaking those into discrete chunks and then rolling them again up into what you see here on the left-hand column as goals. The first section is simply an identification of the objectives, and then starting on page 5, there's some more specific information about what actions we'll take to actually meet the objectives and ultimately the goals and ultimately the benchmarks. The performance measures that are listed in the right-hand column are many of them are pieces, discrete data sets that we have available in the department, as was mentioned earlier. We simply did not have in this time frame the ability to fill in either baseline or trend line data that we do have available. The measures that we would probably point to and beg your indulgence in letting us work on would be the agency efficiency measures, goals 6 and 7. The business case review process that we're in motion with will greatly inform what objectives and goals we end up with landing on and agreeing to in terms of measuring whether or not the agency is actually doing its job and performing to your expectation. Does that help?
That is helpful. Madam Chairman, can I just make
Follow
a brief
up?
Statement? I recognize that you're trying to develop the questions and asking the right questions, and I think it's very appropriate that you take time to do the very best job we can. Having said that, I really do have a concern, and this I've said this before in some of our other budgets, that we don't overburden you or school district to the point of gathering all this information. It comes with way too much time and effort. So, you know, I'm sure you're trying to find that balance,
yes,
too, but we here at this level, sometimes I think we can get a little over-energetic at asking for some of this information that, in the end, really maybe isn't the key issues that we ought to be focusing on. So I appreciate what you're doing. I just want to caution that we don't just bury ourselves with information. That's one of my fears of the computer age, that we've got a lot more information. Sometimes we just bury ourselves with information, mm-hmm, and you can't find the solution.
Absolutely.
They really find what you're looking for. So.
Chair Morgan, Senator Meserle, I completely agree. I think that part of my appointed job description is to make sure that across offices in the agency, we're looking at all of the things that we ask for in terms of data and information and reporting, and reducing the redundancies and the times that we ask people to report. That is something that's very high on the list of things that we'll be scrutinizing in our business process. And most of the data that measures that you see listed in this performance measure document are in fact not new pieces of information. They are information that are currently required under grant streams that we manage or programs that we're responsible for.
Thank you.
Please proceed.
Finally, I'd really like to acknowledge Sue McGlashan, Linda Ames, Dave Fazier in our office for the work that they've put into this. It's a very good team. And I'd like to acknowledge the previous administration and the work that they did that has really positioned us, I think, to come in and do a much better job for you. And hopefully you'll be able to go and talk to your constituents and with some enthusiasm about what they're getting for their money in the system. And so that really concludes my presentation, unless there are any other questions.
Where do we go from here? Okay, I have Mr. Burke on my... you just put him on there? Ms. Ames, please give us BAM's view of the world.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, I have two separate documents here for my presentation. Look like this. If anyone has lost theirs since yesterday, I have a couple of spares here as well. I'm going to start out with the document Grant and Aid. I've split the presentation like we have the budget bill split, grant and aid, and everything else. Being operations, special schools. Partly I think that's helpful because grant and aid is so much larger that if we combine everything together, it's very difficult to see some of the smaller pieces. If you look on page 2, all the numbers from the budget, focus on the 2003-05 governor's budget, you'll see general fund for grant and aid at $198 million. You see there is some increase in that over the 0103 through 5th special session level. That increases caseload growth for early intervention, early childhood special ed. If you skip on down to federal funds, you notice a couple things. One is it is the huge part of this grant and aid budget. This is money going out to schools, targeted federal dollars. You'll also see in this budget, we've split it into two parts with the nutrition program, the $183 million, moving into a non-limited fund category. Those two together, however, to compare to previous years, is $718 million, still a substantial increase. Do keep in mind that at the point where we made this budget, that was somewhat of a guess, and now with the federal budget passed, we'll be updating those numbers for work session. You'll also see there's no positions in grant and aid. This is all pass-through money. Page 3, by the budget by fund type, again, you'll see federal funds limited, and then with the addition of the non-limited federal funds, federal funding makes up 77% of the grant and aid money, general fund at 21%. For a real high-level view of the governor's budget, a 6% increase from the 0103 through 6th special session, with most of that being the federal funds. During 0103 special sessions, the major changes, a reduction of $9 million, or about 3.6% to the larger grant and aid programs. That doesn't include the reductions from administrative rule and the 6th special session, which reduced another $2.5 million. We also eliminated the $2.4 million special purpose appropriation that was originally intended to expand Oregon pre-kindergarten. Major programs in the governor's budget or major changes. The large grant and aid programs are funded at 7% below the 0103 close of session level. Then on top of that, however, we were able to add $12 million to cover caseload in early intervention. A number of the small grant and aid programs have now been completely eliminated. The governor did add $1 million for the SMART program, which is a volunteer-based early literacy program run by the Oregon Children's Foundation. Going on to page 5, here's some detail about the grant and aid programs that are general funds. This is where the biggest chunk of the general fund goes in the department's budget. Early intervention, early childhood, special ed at 46%. The other two very large programs being Oregon pre-kindergarten at $53 million, 27%, and regional programs at $30 million. Okay, page 6 just reminds us all this money is special payments and goes out to schools, ESDs, and other local providers. 7, I'm just going to hit a few of the highlights here. Legislatively approved actions through April. You did appropriate $5 million of the special purpose appropriation this biennium for caseload in early intervention, early childhood special ed. There were substantial reductions, $1.4 million in the second special session. In the essential packages, in the 020 phase-out, I wanted to point out it's not exactly a phase-out. We're moving $300,000 from Oregon pre-kindergarten out of the grant and aid and into operations to be sure that we build this biennium or incorporate that data into the DBI so that we can start understanding more clearly what we're spending money on in that program and position us to start incorporating that program into our outcome measures. As we implement the secure student ID system, I mean, we will have the capability of understanding these children went through Oregon pre-K, and now when they get to third grade, they perform in these sorts of ways on the assessment compared to the kids that didn't get the opportunity to go through Oregon pre-K.
Madam Chair?
Senator Gorley.
I'm not sure that I'm understanding the choice here. It seems that we're taking $300,000 away from a service and putting it into a function in operations. Am I misunderstanding?
Madam Chair, Senator Gordley, that's true, and it is a choice that reduces the dollars that go out for direct program in order to enhance the accountability, and it's always a hard choice to do that.
And in making that choice, Madam Chair, the loss of service is to how many children?
Oh, would that be 37 children?
I guess, Madam Chair, I'm just stunned by the choice. Surely there's $300,000 somewhere else in the budget other than the pre-kindergarten program. I'm just stunned by the choice.
Madam Chair and Senator Gordley, I'm also sure as we go through the agency's technology budget that there will be more discussion about these are the kind of things that the agency is trying to do in their technology, but understanding that they took very large reductions in their technology budget during this biennium. And going through that budget, hearing what their priorities are for their technology, I think this should be part of that discussion.
I will look forward to that discussion, Madam Chair, but again, we're choosing technology over a service to children, and I'm just struggling to understand that.
Well, I think that the issue that we need to be talking about here is one of accountability in trying to assess whether the dollars we're spending in this area are actually having the impacts that we want them to have.
That's legitimate.
And if we don't have those tools in place, then we're essentially in the position where we're just bailing up dollars and throwing them out the front door without really knowing what the citizens are buying for their investment. So I do think we need to have that discussion, and at some point the accountability piece of this needs to be laid on the table and talked about. Senator Misery.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm not sure if Linda, this is the appropriate place to get the information, but I'd be interested in more information on the long-term care treatment programs and hospital programs, and I want to be very clear that my issue is not that those students should not be getting that care. My issue is that should it be funded by a K-12 education or should it be funded by Health and Human Services? And it's been an issue that I've struggled with for a long time. And, you know, I see here that it's we're talking about quite much money.
Mm-hmm.
So if we could get sometime in the presentation more information on that, I'd appreciate it.
I'm also very interested in what the accountability measures are in this area, too. How do we know that the money that we're putting in is actually impacting the children's ability to move through the education system?
Madam Chair, Senator Meserly, I'm sure we're going to be hitting these programs in more detail when we do the special education program area. Okay,
Senator Gordley, did you have a follow-up?
No, I just look forward to the discussion and having it with all of the partners who can help us understand the unintended consequences of the choice.
Please proceed, Ms.
Okay, if we skip ahead to page 8, package 081 and 082, you see the elimination of some of the smaller grant programs. 091 is the large reduction program as a result of the failure of ballot measure 28. 14 eliminates $14.9 million. Again, like in the rest of the education program area, all the cuts happened in the second year of the biennium. We've incorporated those cuts into each year of the 03-05 biennium, so in effect they are doubled. And finally, in package 092, the package where we eliminated all inflation adjustments, as well as eliminating Frontier Learning Network grants, and then that's also where the SMART program funding shows up for a net reduction of another $8.4
million.
On page 9, there's two policy packages in this budget. The transfer of the Even Start Family Literacy Program. This is a federally funded program that's coming over from community colleges. The program's being transferred to better correspond with federal funding streams under No Child Left Behind, and also because it essentially fits better within the Department of Ed's mission. And finally, in package 304, the grant and aid realignment, there's no net budget effect. This is where we move the $183 million federal funds of the nutrition program into a non-limited federal fund category. Basically, we believe that that's appropriate for this kind of a program where it's an entitlement program based on the number of meals served, and the agency has really no control over the number of dollars that flow through in that kind of funding. Finally, I just had a couple comments on the governor's revised budget. I know on yesterday there was some interest in hearing, okay, now that we see the balance, the original budget, how does it stand? The governor did reduce several grant and aid programs in his revised budget. the grant, the state grant for open is reduced by $280,000, about 14%. The funding for student leadership centers is completely eliminated. That's about $720,000. And regional programs is reduced by $12.5 million in this revised budget, or 42%.
Can you say that last piece again?
The regional programs reduced by $12.5 million. That's a 42% reduction to that grant stream, and recognizing that those costs will shift to school districts. Those are required services for special education children.
Madam Chair?
Senator Mazur.
Linda, I didn't get the percentage reduction for student leadership.
That program is eliminated, so 100%.
And what was the reduction for open?
$280,000, and then that's about 14%.
Questions or comments for Ms. Ames on the grant in aid presentation? Well, let's move right on.
Okay, then if we go ahead to the other packet, this includes the rest of the agency, which incorporates operations, the special schools for the blind and the deaf, the youth corrections education program, and debt service. Page 2, again, you have all the numbers. Governor's budget for 0305, general fund, $61 million. That is up $9 million from 0103 through 5th. That increase is two pieces. One, the governor added back $4 million to assessment that had been cut during special sessions. And the rest of the increase is personal services increases, keeping in mind that many of those will be coming out of the budget, possibly a large chunk of HERS funding, merit steps, and the elimination of that second COLA in the current biennium, the roll-up of that. $56 million lottery funds debt service from the past lottery bond issuance in 97-99 and 99-01. Other funds at $39 million is down substantially. That is because a lot of that other funds is the funding for the Youth Corrections Education Program. The way that works is monies from the state school fund is transferred over to that part of the agency. It is then spent as other funds in the budget. That is going to be reduced because of the closure of several facilities from the Oregon Youth Authority and the elimination of, I think it's 250 beds. So the money will not be needed in youth corrections to provide education for those students. Rather, the money is left in the state school fund to provide education in home districts.
Question? Representative Smith.
Okay, that money isn't there now. Help me through this. At the local level, when a student is incarcerated, is it not up to the local school district to pay for that student's education while they are incarcerated?
Chair Morgan, Representative Smith, if they're incarcerated in closed custody in one of the OI facilities, OIA, their education is the responsibility of the agency.
Well, now, that's not my understanding. My understanding is the local school district, that's an expenditure for our locals.
No, several biennia ago, they did specifically change that.
If there is a local facility that's local.
Right. This is state facilities, the closed custody facilities, education programs.
I beg to differ on our local school budget expenditures. Molalla, for instance, Clackamas and Clackamas County facility, our school district is still an expenditure for that. And what I'm wondering is if there isn't a double payment being made there.
Ms. LaGlash.
The department contracts with local education agencies to provide the services.
So you well could see expenditures at the local level for the program.
But she just said the department was paying for it.
They're paying for it through contracts with local education agencies.
But then the expenditure also shows up at the local level. How's that reconciled?
Well, when the local agency receives the contracted funds from the department, that would come into them as revenue. Then they turn around and make expenditures to provide the services, and those are reflected as expenditures.
Okay.
Madam Chair?
Senator Masary.
But I think the other piece of this question is that if they close down the OYA facilities, then some of those students will end up in the county jails, and then it is the local school district that pays for them. Is that not right?
Chair Morgan, Senator Meserly, that is correct. And the funding is still in the state school fund. We did not cut the funding. It's simply that the funding will not be transferred over to the Youth Corrections Education Program to be expended that way. It will be sent directly out to districts to meet those costs.
But it still sounds like you're paying for the same service twice, just with your explanation. If you didn't cut the funding to the local level, but you cut it at the state level, this is still clear as mud to me. Am I not understanding something, people?
Madam Chair, I think the confusion is which kinds of facilities is it? Who pays for education in which kinds of facilities? The state pays for education in the close custody facilities like Hillcrest, McLaren, and a few regional facilities. The way they provide the services is typically they contract with the ESDs to actually provide teachers. But the funds are not coming through the school district's funding. Alternatively, it's my understanding that kids are not in state facilities, but rather are in local facilities. Those are still the responsibility of local school districts.
That sounds a little messy to me.
So, Representative Smith, it may be interesting for you to go back to your local school district and find out what the services are that you're buying for those dollars that you see in the budget.
Absolutely. And where the money's coming from.
Yeah, absolutely. Please proceed.
Okay, let's see if we can. Page 3, the Operations Special Schools budget by fund type. You see general fund at about 30%. Again, all the lottery funds is for debt service. Other funds with the largest piece being the youth corrections education and federal funds at about 22%. Page 4, overview, the governor's budget is a tenth of a percent increase from 0103 in total funds. A lot of that's so low largely because of the reduction in other funds. During special sessions, operations budget was reduced over $9 million general fund, or about 20%. That included $5.4 million in assessment and another $1.5 million in base technology funding, including $1 million of assessment-related technology. Again, that doesn't include the administrative rule reductions in sixth special session. Incorporating those reductions, the operations general fund budget was reduced almost 24% during the current biennium. Special schools had a $1.3 million reduction, or about 7.3%. In the governor's budget, the operations, the general fund, is funded at 20% above a 103 fifth special session. Again, that large increase is due to two pieces, the increase of the $4 million in assessment and personal services roll-up. So some of that will come down substantially as the personal service roll-up is reduced. Special schools is funded at about 7% of 0103 through 5th, and that is all personal services increases.
Madam Chair, I have to come
Senator
back to this again, but There's one piece of this. I'm not sure we got it clear. At least I didn't understand it clearly. We're closing down the beds for OA. That's going to put more stress on the local jail for the students that are incarcerated. The school districts are responsible for paying the cost of that instruction to those students in the local jails. But does the state reimburse them for that extra cost, or does that just come out of their normal FTE?
Madam Chair, Senator Meserle, the students are included in the school district's ADMW. So as we move money out to the school districts through the formula, if the students are still being counted locally, then the funding for those students goes out to the school district.
Madam Chair, I just want to make a point that, yes, that that's not like a classroom. That is special education, and that it's quite often one-on-one or very limited sizes, at least. And so it is, I believe, an additional expense to the local school district. And if they're just getting their normal per-student revenue out of that, it is an extra cost to the district, as opposed to if they were in a OYA facility.
Ms. Ames, if the students are in OYA, what do they get in terms of the allotment that we give for a student in the school system?
Madam Chair, the students in OYA for education are counted as a double-weight student. That is, they're counted as though they are all special education students. Now, to the extent that they are special education students on an IEP, the school district also receives the double weight, at least if they're not above the cap. However, it is possible that not all those students are actually special education students. It would probably vary to some extent, and so you could have some difference in what the local districts get compared to the double weight that they're funded at through youth corrections.
Follow up?
I'm sure I know this is getting this sticky wicket basket, but if they do get double weight, then my guess is the school district makes money on it, quite frankly. I've suspected that, but I've never had it documented to me.
Me too.
Okay. Madam Chair, Senator Meserle, Dave reminded me that Bob Siewert will cover that when we get into the special education program. That is where the youth corrections education program is located in the agency. So that can be prepared for this specific conversation.
Thank you.
I'm done for now.
Please proceed.
Page 5. The budget by program units. Operations accounts for about 48% of the total funds budget. Special schools about 10%. The youth corrections education program 13%. And the remaining 29% is the debt service. Page 6 by budget category. You'll see personal services account for only about 31%. That is smaller than maybe typical of an agency, while services and supplies is almost 40%. Keep in mind, and I know the agency will be talking more about this, the agency uses professional services in services and supplies to contract for a lot of services, including all the correction services that are contracted with to ESDs and local providers. And debt service, again, with special payments and capital outlay being very small. Page 7, again, I want to skip through here pretty quickly. Legislative actions through April is second special session. We've pretty much covered that already. If you skip over to page 8, base budget adjustments, you do see almost a $10 million increase in the personal services roll-up. Again, that includes things we're going to take out, including PERS, merits, and the roll-up of the second COLA that was eliminated. Here again in the 020 phase-in, you see the transfer of that $300,000 from Oregon Pre-K into operations. That's just where it's coming in. phase outs. The largest general fund phase out was $175,000 for the feasibility study relating to the data integrity project. That project was cut during one of the special sessions. Then if we skip down on page 9 to 090, program reductions, that's specifically where we took the reduction to account for the 250 fewer beds in youth corrections. Over on page 10, the larger reduction packages, 091, a result of ballot measure 28 failing, reduces the budget by $4 million general fund and 7.2 full-time equivalent positions. Again, basically that doubles the cut level that we saw in 0103 as we incorporate the cuts into both years of the biennium. Finally, 092 is the package where we reduce all the inflation for operations in special schools. Policy package 010 is where the governor has added the $4 million to restore assessments that were cut during the current school year. And then over on page 11, there is a policy package called organizational alignment. This is really a cleanup package with no net budget impact. Basically, the agency's trying to get their budget worked.
Ms. Ames, Representative Bates has a question.
Well, Ms. Ames, this may not be a proper question for you, but going back to the technology-enhanced student restoration realignment, the $4 million going back in.
Mm-hmm.
Correct me if my memory is wrong on this. My memory is this was a program we wanted to put in so that the testing you did in the 3rd, 5th, 8th, and 10th grades got back to the teachers faster. Is that correct or is that incorrect?
Madam Chair, Representative Bates, that certainly is one of the advantages of that program.
I might just interject here, Representative Bates. We have next on our agenda a discussion on assessments and evaluations. Mm. That may be a better place to put this.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'll be glad to wait.
Okay.
Thank you.
It's probably worth noting as well that the $4 million isn't specifically TASA. It's more generally assessment. Okay, and page 11, the organizational realignment, trying to get the budget aligned with how the agency actually does business. It does add 11 positions and funds those positions with money in the services and supplies category. And policy package 108, the transfer of Even Start, this is simply the operations piece of that package that we already talked about. And a quick highlight on the governor's revised budget. The governor does reduce $1 million out of the operations budget and backfills the interest earnings that were lost from the Education Stability Fund in order to fully fund debt service. That's about $8 million.
Okay, he backfilled interest from the Stability Fund.
Right.
For the opportunity grants.
The interest from the Stability Fund go two places. A quarter of it goes for opportunity grants. Three quarters of it goes for debt service for education.
Okay.
So this is the piece to backfill the debt service.
And what was the net cost of that?
It's $8.3 million. The two pieces together is the $11.1 million.
And what was the first piece that you gave us?
A reduction to operations of $1 million.
Representative Smith, what's our debt service paying for?
This is paying for the lottery revenue bonds that we issued for schools during the 97-99 biennium and the 99-01 biennium, a total of $227 million?
277.
277.
And why did we issue those bonds? Technology upgrades. Technology upgrades in all the schools?
I'm not...
Madam Chair and Representative Smith, were for education projects, and the first round, there was a definition in statute as far as what the school districts could use those funds for, but it was pretty generous, I would say, because school districts were actually able to use some of those or use those funds for operational expenses, which I understand from the department a couple of years ago when asked this question, about half the school districts use the proceeds for operational expenses and the other half for capital projects.
Follow-up. I would just be very leery of ever doing something like that again without adequate oversight as to where the money's going. I mean, to me, that's a huge black hole. That money's gone. We don't know what we bought for it. Now we're in debt making payments on it. To me, that's one of the most irresponsible, I'm not done, one of the most irresponsible uses of money in light of the fact that we have school buildings all over the state of Oregon who are falling downward. If they're going to go into debt, at least have it be a capital improvement for a new school or a remodel or a furnace. Not that it's your fault. I'm not blaming
it's
the
debt. It's the 97 legislature.
Well, and Representative Smith, with all due respect, bonding for operational expenses is a place that we went in the interim also.
I didn't vote for that,
Madam. Madam Chair.
Representative Thames.
I'd like to point out that the 97, what I will call a debacle, was it a result, I believe, of an initiative brought by the people of the state, if I remember correctly. Is that correct? Wasn't that a state initiative that was passed that was voted on by the voters, the first one? And it was very loosely written. It was written in a ballot measure that was rife with fungibility. I know our particular school district chose to do upgrades, capital upgrades, and to build a new school out of it, a small school in a rural area. Other areas used it for, as you said, operational expenses. The second one, I think, was a result of legislative action. And both of them were bonding of lottery dollars, if I remember correctly. Mm-hmm. And the idea being initially to help with capital changes in the schools, which was not done in many districts in the first. And in the second, I have no idea what happened because, again, there was no oversight. But I believe the second half was legislative. The first half was an initiative, if I remember correctly.
Madam Chair and Representative, you're right in the second issuance was legislative. I think the first one was actually referred to the voters by the legislature, if I recall correctly.
Yeah, Madam Chair, it's too far back for me.
In either case, Madam Chair, I don't think it was directly this department's responsibility to oversee those dollars.
Mm-mm. No.
But there was a lack of legislative oversight for both of them, and I would agree with Representative Smith in the future we need to earmark money more carefully.
Please,
Madam Chair, I am finished, actually, at long last.
Does that conclude your presentation? Are there any further questions or comments for Ms. Ames? Well, we actually have a half an hour left here. So I would assume that you would like to go to Associate Superintendent Audie.
Good morning.
Good morning.
For the record, my name is Bill Audie, and I manage the Office of Assessment for the Department of Education. Thank you for the opportunity to tell you about our assessment system. The first slide, and I believe all the offices will have a similar slide, lays out what is the budget we're talking about. And for in the governor's balanced budget for the next biennium, we have...
Tell us where we're supposed to be in our books, please.
In binder two, I believe we're the first tab... There.
Now, give us a minute to shuffle the stuff around.
Sure. Mm-hmm. I believe all the office presentations from now on will be out of that second book.
Does this have something to do with finding money?
No, this has to do with people who might need to see their doctor and don't.
I wonder who that would be.
Looks like you're all there. We
okay. You didn't.
We're looking at about a little over $15 million in general funds and just over $5 million in federal funds. The federal funds were new last year. This was a part of No Child Left Behind. The law provided for certain funds for 5 years. This is in this biennium, we have the second and third year, to develop assessments, content standards, and also the reporting systems. Some other offices will show grant and aid. We don't have any grant and aid that we manage out of the Office of Assessment. And the presentation I have today is organized as follows. We'll look at purposes, essentially why do we have a state assessment system, performance, what and who do we test, how do we use our budget, what are the outcomes and results, what have we accomplished. There's also been questions about why not use a publisher's test instead of the one we've developed, and so we've put together some information specifically to that question. And concluded, what are the values? What are the core values of the assessment program? On slide four, we essentially have three purposes for the state assessment system. One is a instructional accountability. How effective is the instruction we provide to schools? What are we producing the effect we intend to in student learning? We also have a purpose to certify students. In other words, what by individual student, what level of knowledge and skills does each child have? The third purpose is school accountability. How well are schools doing their job? In our state, we have developed a single set of assessments that meet all three purposes. So whenever a student sits down to take a test, it's both for their purpose for certification, it's for the teacher's purposes for looking at their instruction, and we use it for school accountability. Other states have created separate assessment systems. We believe this makes it simpler and quicker for teachers and students. It is a little more complex to explain. If you look at slide five, the purposes have evolved over time. The state assessment system was essentially established in the 1989 session, and its purpose was that program accountability. How well are students doing as a group? How well are schools doing, districts doing? In 1995, the legislator specifically directed ODE to determine individual student success primarily on the basis of the state academic tests. That required us to shift in some significant ways how we design and administer the tests. In 1999, the legislature directed ODE to create a rating system. These are the school report cards that come out every January. And that also forced us to make some changes in how we administer tests so we can be comparable at that level for public reporting.
Madam Chair.
Senator Mazzoli.
Thank you, ma'am. I'm not sure, again, if this is the right place to raise this issue, but I'm becoming more and more concerned that we're educating to a test as opposed to educating to problem-solving skills. And one of the concerns I have, I went to my elementary school in a very small country school where one teacher might have two or three grades. But then on up through the programs where we had a lot of vocational problems, and it seems to me that the wording on those tests that you might be able to measure students' learning ability in a rural school, as an example, compared to an inner city school, might be very different simply in how you phrase the problem or the language that they're used to or understand. As we do this comprehensive statewide test, are we accounting for that, or are we simply testing to a test?
Chair Morgan, Senator Messerly, we account for that in a couple of ways. One is that we do not intend or pretend that the state assessment is all the assessment that's relevant to students. So part of the system that's not in our state accountability system, but we do support our classroom work samples where we provide, say, the scoring guide, what are the criteria, but the specific nature of the assessment is up to the teacher and should be integrated to whatever they're instructing. So we do have a component that is left local. We do not include it in the accountability measure, the school report cards, because, again, the intention of that is there should be some set of things that is common to the whole state. So I think that's how we account for that.
If I could follow up, Madam Chair, but unless you want to take the risk of scoring low on the statewide report card, it would seem to me at all levels that the instructors, the teachers, are just about bound to teach to the statewide test, aren't they?
Chair Morgan, Senator Messerly, the way I would say it is that we have established a set of common curriculum goals, content standards, and that's what everyone should be teaching to. And I'll actually address this in the next slide. What our job in the assessment system is to create an assessment system that matches that so that we're all moving to the same target. The note that was just passed to me is a reminder, and I'll say it later also, is that we do involve teachers from around the state in writing. All of the test items are written by Oregon teachers.
Okay. Thank you.
Chair.
Representative Bates.
Since Senator Messley has started the conversation, I'm going to chime in just for a moment. I initially had very grave concerns that the test we are offering in mathematics and in English language proficiency would be something you just teach to the test and get through. I've been convinced now, after looking at those tests and talking to a multitude of teachers, you can't teach these tests. You've either got, in mathematics, you have to be able to prove what you've gotten the answer to. You have to know your basic mathematics. There's no way of teaching to the test. You've got to know the basic material in order to pass the test. And especially in the writing portion, where it's a written writing exam, where the students have to turn in a piece of paper with writing on it, you really can't do that. And I feel you've done a good job in taking care of that. Having said that, I have grave concerns about the report card. I believe the report card is more a representation of socioeconomic factors in the district than it is what the schools are doing. Before that report card came out the first time, my principals and I sat down and we scored ourselves, and we selected the highest schools in the state that would fail on that test. We predicted all of them accurately to every single one, and it was on socioeconomic factors, not the schools. And that was very concerning to us. I still have grave concerns that the report card is an unfair advantage to high schools, school districts, and high-income areas with a well-educated population, in areas where you have ethnic or racial differences, where you have rural schools. It is not fair to those schools in that rating system. There are things in there with dropout rates, with attendance rates, that I think are questionable at best. And I think that may be what Senator Messler is looking at, too.
Chair Morgan, Representative Bates, to the first one, thank you. The writing and math problem solving are components of our test. They're not multiple choice, and they do indeed require students to go beyond simple recall knowledge, and we're very proud in having that as a part of our assessment system. And also, the connection between socioeconomic status and school student achievement is well established and has been a problem nationwide for quite a while. One of the things that is a strength of the No Child Left Behind Act is that it will require us, and we'll start reporting student performance separated out by the particular category of economic disadvantage, and under determining school proficiency, a school cannot make adequate yearly progress if it does not show progress for that subgroup of students.
Please proceed.
Okay. On slide 6, as I said earlier, alignment is really the key to what we're doing here. We have established they're called common curriculum goals, or the content standards. That's been clear. That is the target for students. And our goal, as I said, for the assessment system, is to have an assessment system that is covering that content. And that is actually a major accomplishment, and I think it's one of the strengths of constructing the assessments here in Oregon. When we first published these content standards, we looked at national tests that were available at that time. It was a researcher from the University of Oregon. And the best national test covered more than half of what was in our content standards, and half of those tests covered content that wasn't in our standards. So what we can now say is that we have a very close alignment between assessment and the target, the curriculum. And I would say that the results that you'll probably see from other offices in terms of, and you've seen it in the Oregon State report card, the growth over time in the last 10 years, even when resources have been cut, the most likely explanation is that we have a clear alignment between what we're intending to teach, what we're teaching, and what we're assessing.
Thank you. Madam Chair. Senator Gordon.
Thank you very much. Could you explain where and how the multicultural curriculum effort fits into this curriculum alignment?
Madam Chair, Senator Gordley, yes, the that part of the that requirement that came in 1999 has been integrated into the social science curriculum. And if you look at those curriculum documents, you can see where that is. I can get those to you if you like. They are stated there.
I would like.
Okay.
Thank you very much. Thank you.
Okay.
Please proceed.
Okay. Slide 7, put this in to give a clear picture of exactly what we test and when and how many. So it's an indication of sort of the volume of testing we do. We test reading, writing, math, math problem solving, and science. This was the 2002, the last complete year. And you can see the volume there. It comes to about over 800,000 tests during that year. Oh, I probably should make a note here. There was information, the question about the governor's restoration of money for certain assessments. During what we're testing right now, we had, because of cuts during the five special sessions, we had to eliminate science, math problem solving, and writing at grades 5 and 8. So we're not testing those this year, and those are the tests that are targeted for restoration under the governor's balanced budget. If you look at the next,
Madam Chair, I could argue that the most important thing you do is testing. Others would argue that's not right. But I could argue that's the most important thing you do from a school district's point of view. To cut this program, I think was a travesty. That's the only good accountability I know of the system. And I am not happy if you haven't cut this program. I know we cut your funds. You've got a $200 million budget. I find it hard to believe that money couldn't have been diverted from somewhere else to maintain this program. I just got to get that in the record.
Okay.
I'm sorry. It's not anything against you personally. Don't take it that way. We did what we had to do, but I'm going to tell you, that just raises my blood pressure like you raised the chairs a few minutes ago.
Okay.
The Representative Bates, having sat at the table over the five special sessions as we were grappling with how to deal with the fall off in revenue, the testing piece came up because we felt that it was a way to maintain money going to classrooms for teaching and still being able to make economies. And so that was why we took that piece. To have it carried forward, I think, is an issue that we do need to talk about. And I think that the framework that we need to talk about this in is within the framework of the testing requirement of No Child Left Behind. And we need to be looking at the requirements of that mandate and we need to lay them over top of each other and try to figure out with the statewide assessments and the TESA piece where we're at in terms of being able to fulfill our federal requirements, and if we may not be better off to take a look at an off-the-shelf kind of an assessment piece that satisfies No Child Left Behind and gives us the information that we want to be able to assess where the students in the state of Oregon are going in the national box that we're playing in. So this is, I think, more than just to talk about TESA and the state assessments. It needs to be framed in a much wider context because we now have a federal piece that's been laid over the top of it.
And Madam Chair,
Senator Gordon.
Just looking backwards, this is to the credit of the previous superintendent who argued strenuously that we keep the assessment piece in place. In fact, he argued that it needed to be enhanced.
And it appears that it is going to be. Please continue.
Certainly. Well, to be responsive as quickly as possible, your next comment was how do we lay this over with the federal requirements, and that's in the next slide. The what we're looking at in the next biennium is to test at each of the grades 3 through 8, and then once at the high school. Those are the requirements of No Child Left Behind. And to test reading, writing, math, problem solving, social science, and science. And with the exception of social science, all those are required by No Child Left Behind. So you can see here where there's a state requirement and where there's a federal requirement. There's no testing that isn't required by at least one of them.
Madam Chair.
Representative March.
Will the Oregon test satisfy the No Child Left Behind federal requirement tests?
Chair Morgan, Representative March, yes. As a matter of fact, they are already approved. The law existed in a different form. It was reauthorized in 1994. In 2001, our system was approved, and we actually there have been some questions about that. So I think the very end of the assessment tab in your binder is a letter from the U.S. Department of Education says that we are approved.
Great, thanks.
Representative Bates.
Madam Chair, I would have to say that the testing program we use in this state is looked at by other states as a model to be emulated. This is not something we just put together willy-nilly. It was put together very carefully by Northwest Regional Labs. It's a model other states have looked at and wanted to copy. It was the first accountability tool I ever had in my school district that allowed me to really see what was going on. And I think dropping this would be a huge mistake, not only from the point of view of what it would probably cost to go to a new system, which would be substantial. I would expect it would be anyway. I haven't seen any figures on it. But that this now is something that's been accepted by parents, teachers, and students as an honest way of looking at what sites are doing and what individual students are doing. The biggest problem with it is the amount of time it takes to correct the test to get that information back to individual student and teacher. And that needs to be remedied. I think we have to be extremely careful about thinking of changing the testing system as far as bringing something off the shelf and just dropping it in here. I have real concerns about that. I would say that we may need to go to testing every year. We need to be much more effective in getting a time sequence down so it can be brought back to the individual student for improvement. But the basic testing itself, I don't think, is the problem here. The problem is how we apply it, how fast we get the results. And I think if you went out of state and asked other people what they thought about our testing system, they'd say it's doggone good. I think that's probably why the feds have accepted it so quickly.
If I might interject, Representative Bates, I think that a question that we need to look at besides the effectiveness of the testing system is the cost of it. And I think that is the main purview of this committee is to assess the cost of the testing in terms of its effectiveness and what other alternatives are available. And with that in mind, I'm curious if you can take us to this graph on page 8. And what I'm assuming here is these are the tests that are planned by the department to be administered in the 03-05 biennium. Can you tell the committee which tests are now in place and are being given?
Madam Chair, yes. The at grades 3, 5, 8, and at the high school, we have the reading, writing, math problem solving, and science tests. Science is in third grade. Those, you can look to the 2002 on page 7 lays out what we have in place.
So if I'm looking at the fifth grade column, then you currently offer all the tests that are required by the state and the federal level.
Yes.
Okay, please continue.
And the social science tests have been developed. They were intended to be administered statewide this year, and we scaled that back to just doing a sufficient sample to set the performance standards, and they're scheduled to be implemented next year. However, I should note that the co-chair's budget specifically reduces $800,000 from assessment, which was the amount we said social science testing will cost. So nothing has changed in law. So our plans are to continue with social science assessment, but that is the status of it.
And so were you planning then to administer the social sciences test to all students in grade 6 and grade 8 and grade 10 and 12?
Yes, that is our plan.
Okay.
The in term.
Yes, Representative Bates.
Oh, thank you. I don't want to take up too much time. Oh. What is the policy decision about going into the social science testing program, which is mainly a content, I would expect, program, without first resolving the issues we've talked about in your testing program already, which is getting information back more quickly and getting the testing done in a fashion that that can be used by the students the same year? Why are you branching? I mean, getting this thing a mile wide, an inch deep, and one of the arguments has been is keep it narrow and put some real depth into it and give those kids the tools they need to learn content at a later time. Well, that's math, that's reading, that's thinking. What's the policy decision to go into another area when you haven't covered the areas that we think are most important already? Some think are most important already.
Chair Morgan, Representative Bates, two responses. One is the social science testing is a state requirement, and so we're meeting the timeline set out by statute for that. On the other side, we have TESA, as you mentioned earlier, online assessment is an area we're vigorously pursuing. That allows for students to get their scores instantaneously at the end of the assessment. And we have almost a third of our students this year, and by the end of the biennium, we expect three quarters of the students to be participating in that. I would also say, in defense of the paper and pencil, in comparison with what I've seen in other states, we turn around the individual results quicker. We are at or above the standard for returning results. We do the individual results on the paper, the multiple choice tests are always done within 6 weeks of the closing of the assessment window, and so within the same school year. The only tests that do not come back in the same year are when we test writing and math problem solving in the spring. Since we use teachers to do it, we don't want to pull them out of classrooms. They get assessed in June, and so the results are actually in July, but obviously they don't go back to schools till the fall. So I can assure you that, and you'll see one of our core values includes timeliness, and that we work to shave days, hours off of the turnaround time to get the data out to people.
Follow up?
Madam Chair, I think he explained it to himself well enough. I mean, that's exactly what we had a problem with the school districts. We want the test facts. We can affect the students with that teacher in that classroom at that point, and you just give me all the reasons you can't do it. What I really want to hear is how you're going to do it, and I don't expect that to come right now, right here, but I think your reorganization will probably speak to that. We want these tests to be applied and then gotten back to that teacher and that classroom and that student right away, so that they can make corrections. They know how those kids are doing and say, you're behind in reading, you're behind in math, we need to set something up to change it for you. Mm-hmm. Not when they're gone home from school the summer, next year around, they got a different teacher, different classroom, the test may or may not get there. Enough.
Sure. Well, Chair Morgan, if I may, I may have given an incorrect perception. The spring testing and the perform on the writing and math problem solving is a choice. We offer a winter window in which we return them just after spring break. Schools have requested that they'd like to test at a later time, especially high schools that have a block system where they have all the instruction being given between January and May. No one is required to test. So if anyone that wants to get their results within the same year can do testing, and we'll provide them in that way.
Madam Chair, we can get a debate about this, and if you want to talk about testing in the high school level of math and how we're doing it at the wrong level at the wrong time before kids have had a chance to take the classes to see how they're doing, that's a whole different discussion, but I would be glad to engage you in that because I know it well. You're going to have a hard time convincing me you're going to win. We would waste up too much time up here. We'll do it privately.
And hold that thought, because in the last 6 minutes, I would like to have my question answered about which pieces of this testing are currently in place.
Chair Morgan, certainly. For all students, it is only the 3, 5, 8, and 10. And if I got a note that maybe I misspoke. It's only once, 10th grade at the high school. And we have pilot tested. We have, with our first draft, of the 4th, 6th, and 7th grade tests, but those are not administered to all students.
Okay, let me make sure I'm getting what you're saying here. So in 3, 5, 7, and 10.
3, 5, 8, and 10.
3, 5, 8, and 10?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, you have reading, writing, math, problem solving, and science. Is that correct?
Those tests.
No, you don't have, wait a minute, you don't have problem solving or science in 3.
Correct. And the writing is also, it's been suspended. So just this year, we're not giving writing, math, problem solving, and science below the 10th grade level. We could, we didn't have the money. They will be back in next year. Is that?
Okay. The rest of it now, and when you say it's in process, that you have, what does that actually mean?
The in process. Sorry, Chair Morgan.
So you had some pilot programs?
Oh, yes. The we are using the TESA system. Those schools that are able to take, chosen to take assessments online, have available to them tests at grade 4, 6, and 7. And so right now, I assume that is available, and kids are online testing in those grades. But it is not a requirement, and it is not something that we include in the accountability system yet. So it is something that's available, and it's something we're piloting so that we can put those out next year for all students.
The challenge that we have, and what we need from you, obviously, are some tools to make an assessment here. But we need some way, rationally, in this committee to be able to compare where you're at in complying with No Child Left Behind and where that folds into the state assessment system. Can you give us any kind of help there in how we might make a rational decision about what is the best direction to go in?
Certainly, Chair Morgan. Maybe I've been making it too complicated. This chart is it. That for next year, given the governor's budget and given what we've prepared, those are the grades and subjects we will be assessing. And any that have an F in that cell are federally required. And that would be
You're not giving us the tools that we need. You're not giving us the information that we need to decide whether putting money into this is a better deal for the people of Oregon than going into a third-party system.
Chair Morgan, would you like me, I do have slides particularly to that, would you like me to go to that analysis?
Well, in the last 2 minutes we have left, perhaps this would be a discussion left best to the next time that we meet.
Okay.
But we need the information to be able to make a decision on what is the best use of the dollars here.
Chair Morgan, just as a preview, we have done a market analysis. We've looked at what it would cost to use a publisher's test, and we can compare it point by point with that, and that's what's in the slides that are coming.
Chair?
Senator Messerman.
Yes, Madam Chair, that's pretty basic. I thought I heard you say that the federal government has approved the state's testing program. Does that mean that in all these categories there's only one test given, the state test, and that covers the federal, or are there some categories where there's two tests given, the state and the federal test?
Chair Morgan, Senator Messerly, that there's a single assessment in each one of these areas, reading third grade, and it meets both state and federal requirements.
Okay.
So single test for kids, two requirements.
So we're using the state test?
Correct.
Okay. Thank you.
Chair Morgan, Senator Messerly, if I can continue, the law specifically requires each state to set content standards and adopt assessments, and so that's part of the analysis of off-the-shelf test. It has to be adapted to meet state content standards.
We are currently out of time. The senators have given us a half hour of their floor session to sit here with us, which I very much appreciate. So what I'll do now is adjourn the committee meeting. And we will continue.
Thursday. Thursday.